Good morning. This is Lance Kenmore with the Kenmore team, and I'd like to welcome you to this week's edition of the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. As always, you can contact me, Lance Kenmore, anytime direct on my cell phone at 727-8977 or visit us on the web at kenmoreteam.com. Once again, I always like to thank John for hosting and everybody here at the station for working to make this happen. John, how you doing over there?
Well, other than being a little windblown this week and rain and
I know exactly what you mean. I thought it must have been, I think, Thursday morning. I went to climb Badger and I got in my car, and your radio station is always on my dial. And on the way to climb Badger, it said something about wind chill being 35, and I almost turned around and went back to bed. There was some wind out there, some cold mornings this week. So
we did have some.
It's our typical, you know, make us think it's summer or early spring, and then get cold for a little while longer. I think we've been through this in April before in the Tri-Cities. With us in the studio is our resident in-house lending specialist, Mr. Mike Denslow. How you doing?
I'm doing good as well, and you're right. This is just, it's just April.
Right, it's Tri-Cities. It's April in Tri-Cities, so I'll take it, though. It's still good weather to get out. We've been showing a lot of houses, putting a lot of deals together. They're still flying off the market as fast as they come on the market, maybe even a little faster than they're coming on. So
yeah, everybody got back from spring break and was like, oh yeah, this same house.
Absolutely.
We wanted a bigger house, and now we're coming back, and we talked about it. Come on, let's do something about it.
It has been a firestorm of that the last 3 weeks, so definitely very, very busy out there.
Well, speaking of firestorms.
Yeah, that's a good lead into it, Mike. So our national real estate story this week had to be there was a major fire at Trump Tower.
Yeah, I heard about that.
In New York. Unfortunately, there was a casualty. The owner of the apartment that caught fire did pass away from injuries sustained and smoke damage. It's in the fire. But on the 50th floor of an apartment in Trump Tower, where Trump still maintains a residence, there was an apartment fire. And it was interesting because one of the things it talked about in the article, that the tower was built prior to 99, and so it does not have sprinklers. A sprinkler system in it. Modern day sky rises and apartment high rises have sprinkler systems, but that was not the code requirement prior to that when it was built into the 1980s. They did say, luckily, amazing response from the fire department. There was smoke detectors in the ventilation systems that alerted the fire department. They were able to put it out without too much major damage. There was smoke damage, obviously, to numerous floors, but was able to get the fire out for sure. So definitely brings up the point that you can come across when you're doing home inspections. And this national story was a perfect example of that, is you're not always going to see everything up to modern code in houses. And we find that a lot of times. And, you know, it was interesting because as I was researching the story, a couple other headlines in other news organizations kind of sensationalized it. And they were like, no sprinklers in the building out of code. Well, it was to code for when it was built, and they were not required to go back and retrofit every building in New York City. But now when you have an article like this, a lot of them came up and focused with, well, maybe we should require that. So it came before the city once before, and it was shot down by developers at that time. It'll be interesting to see, because of an event like this, if they go back and bring that to the city's attention.
Yeah, good one, Lance. And let's take it back to Tri-Cities. So I had a closing this past week of a house that was built in 1920.
Ooh.
And the appraiser called out an extra structural engineer cert for the foundation, because original foundation from 1920, and they had a structural engineer come in and certify that it was still sound and everything. But just, you know, you know, almost 100-year-old home.
Absolutely. And when selling those, a lot of people sometimes are under the false impression is to sell that home, it's not a requirement. You know, there's not a, there's four or five things that have to be done. Like now it's mandated by law that a seller selling has to have a carbon monoxide detector in the house. But it is not required that every single thing be brought up to code in the house to facilitate the sale. And that is one of those myths that is sometimes out there. Otherwise, if that was the case, every time there was a new code, you know, every single home in Tri-Cities would have to be updated. So kind of interesting when you get a story like that, a national story like that, that definitely has, you know, a lot of impact and meaning to the same type of local issues that we deal with here in the Tri-Cities. Just a fun little note, of course, because once that fire was put out and the building was still standing, as he does, Trump issued a fantastic short little tweet on Twitter that said, of course, well-built building, as only Trump could put out on Twitter. So there you have it. It is also of note that they say values in that building have actually plummeted since Trump has taken office because of the extra security that people have to go through to come and leave the building with Secret Service and what they have to deal with. It's actually been an extreme hindrance on people in that building. So it has slowed sales of apartments in that building because it's a big hassle.
Well, McKay, we're lucky we don't have Trump building a tower here in South Kennewick, right?
Oh, like our April Fool's joke.
nice job on that one, McKay. For sure.
Yeah, between that and the new bridge over the river, we had a lot of people bite on that. In fact, there's somebody out there right now probably going, wait a minute, that's an April Fool's joke? That ain't funny.
I loved the real estate angle on the April Fool's joke, for sure.
So all correspondence may be directed to Kenmore team.
Wow, you're killing me here. Okay, gotcha. We did discuss some action on that. I think Mr. Denslow also helped with that one for sure. Well, one of the things we wanted to do as we were kind of getting ready for the show and talking about things is I just wanted to go over and I talked to Mike and I just said, hey, I know there's a lot going on in lending right now. One of the things that happens as prices have increased and the median price of homes has gone up in the Tri-Cities, people start to look around and say they pay a little closer attention to what are my options and what's going on with lending. So I started to dig into that a little bit. And really, one of the first things that I came up with that was really, really interesting is kind of looking at VA loans by the numbers. And so there was some data out there on that. And actually in 2017, nationwide, there was 740,000 loans guaranteed by the VA. 51% of those were purchase loans, and very, very similar to the area in Tri-Cities, but the national average loan amount for VA was $261,000. So kind of interesting, they're pretty active in that lending segment. And Mike, I know you know a lot more about that than I do, but those were some of the national numbers that got me thinking, you know, as prices increase, and one of the things that people look at is the price is higher, harder to save for a down payment. It was also to note that 82% of all VA loans ended up being zero down. And in today's day and age, there's not a lot of zero down options, but you can do that with VA, right, Mike?
Yeah, it depends on the particular veteran's entitlement, but they, you know, if they've served and, you know, they have the right certificate of eligibility, they can do zero down. That's zero down on the loan. There are still closing costs and the starting of your escrow account. But yeah, we do a lot of VA loans in this area. I was just talking with someone and I was thinking about going back and looking at the Tri-Cities market over the last few years to see how that percentage may have increased, because I feel like we're doing more VA loans, more people getting out of the military, moving here for jobs in Tri-Cities and getting VA loans. The thing with VA is they instead of the PMI that you see on less down loans on conventional and FHA, they don't have mortgage insurance on a VA loan. They have what's called the VA funding fee that gets added into the loan. It's different if it's first, second, third use. If you have a VA disability, you don't have to pay the funding fee. So there's a lot of little intricacies to a VA loan. There's VA jumbo loans. I mean, there's a lot going on. Obviously, you know, talk to somebody who knows about what they're doing, but plenty of VA loans in Tri-Cities going on these days.
Oh, and I have data. I have data.
Okay.
Speaking of Mike's question, your Great. Number for Washington State in 2017, there was a 4.3% increase in the amount of VA loans that was being done.
So, we're feeling that here, definitely.
And then it was really interesting when you look at some of the sunshine states like Nevada and Arizona, where that market has rebounded. It was crazy. They had a 10% increase in Nevada, and Arizona was 11.6% for the number of VA loans that were done. Now, some of the basic qualifications for a VA loan is 90 consecutive days during wartime served or 181 consecutive days during peacetime. Also, if you did more than 6 years in the National Guard or Reserves, you could also be eligible for a VA loan.
Hmm.
And since the inception of that program, the VA loan program has been able to help 22 million veterans achieve homeownership.
And wow. If people don't know if they're eligible or not and they've served, they can just get a hold of us. We have a direct connection into VA and we can run that certificate of eligibility and find out pretty quickly.
Good information on the VA. Now, Mike, not everybody has that option. So as we were kind of putting down, you know, our ideas for the lending show today, one of the things that people talk about a lot is that down payment. And so we started and kind of led in with that. Okay, if you're VA, you can go VA, you might have that option of doing zero down. But if you don't, one of the biggest hurdle for first-time home buyers is how long is it going to take for me to save for a down payment? So once again, dug into that, did a little bit of research and said, okay, if I needed to go ahead and save, say, 10% down for the down payment, and I compared that to the median home price in Washington, it's getting tougher in Washington. We have been historically a lower priced market where housing was more affordable than some other areas. But when you get down and look at the numbers, it's difficult. Washington, to save that 10% down based upon the state's median income and the house price, we're looking at 7 years to get to 10% down when you're comparing your cost of living and to stay in there. So that is, you know, when people are looking at this, they talk about, gosh, why are millennials waiting until their late 20s or in some cases early 30s to purchase houses? Well, as you look, as prices have increased and there's higher pressure on prices, it's taking longer to save for that 10% down. So one of the things we start doing is looking at different options, because here's another thing that absolutely blew my mind. When I went back and looked at what has the average appreciation been in home prices in Washington over the last 5 years, because I'm like, okay, so it's going to take somebody 7 years to save up the down payment for that 10%. What's going to happen to house prices during that time unless we either find a way to save faster, earn more money, or look at different options? Home prices in the last 5 years in Washington, granted, we've been in an amazing last five time period, 56% of increase in prices over the last 5 years.
Wow.
So that if it took you 7 years to save for that down payment, the house price has gone up 56%, and probably a little bit more, because that's just a I could only find data on a 5 year time period. So one of the things we're going to talk to Mike about is there any other programs out there less than 10% that we can talk to you about?
Yeah, absolutely. I was sitting here listening to, I only had the subject line that you sent me. Hey, let's talk about this. And so I started writing down things on 10% down. I would say the majority of people that I see do either on a conventional loan are going to do 5% or 20%. Less people do 10% because the difference between 5 and 10% down doesn't really change the numbers too much. And with if you're going to go FHA, maybe your credit score isn't to the conventional standard. So you're going to look at FHA, and that's predominantly 3.5% down. So we kind of see that 3 to 5% or 20%. So if you're saving and you can't come up with a 10 or the 20 and you can maybe come up with a 3 to 5, 3% conventional, 5% conventional are definitely the way to go if your credit scores are there. And again, if they're not there, but they're reaching the minimums, then FHA at 3.5%. And then there's down payment assistance programs. There's some in Tri-Cities. There's the Tri-City Down Payment Consortium. There's the Washington State Housing and Finance Commission. So there are definite things rather than waiting 5 to 7 years.
Yeah, and Mike, I would like to say I did the math, but I cheated. I have a graph for that too. If you do the 3% that you're talking about, that lowers the amount of time in Washington to save for the down payment to 2.1 years. So now we're talking about 2.1 years, saving up that 3 to 5%, getting into the home, and then taking advantage of the appreciation faster.
Well, and the other thing we do see a decent amount is gift from a relative as well to help out with that down payment. If down payment assistance programs don't work and you're not saving enough and you can't get a gift, well, then yeah, it might take a little while, but there you go. Two years or so.
2 years, and then we are in the money. Folks, we've been talking about a lending special today, some different aspects of what's going on in the lending world. How quickly can we save for our down payments? We looked at VA loans. When we come back from the break, we're going to dig into what is private mortgage insurance and a little bit about also what are lenders looking for on your bank statements.
Right here on News Talk 870.
Welcome back to the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. We've been doing a lending special and diving into some of the intricacies of loans, how long it might take you to save up to have the down payment you needed to purchase a house in Washington. Before we get back to our loan topic, we always like to hit some property that's out on the market. And we have some new properties that have come on the market. There's not a lot of inventory right now, so these are some fantastic ones. Number one, 1830 Hunt Point out in Richland. This is a two-bedroom, one-bath H house in Richland's historic Gold Coast District. 2130 square feet. Hardwood floors through the main level, large living room. You've got an additional space for a den or formal dining room. Full basement with three-quarter bath, extra storage, space where you could possibly do a third bedroom if you wanted to. Lots of possibility. Fully fenced backyard, great, great location close to the river, walking path, and just an awesome, awesome place to be. Priced at $249,900, so $249,900 right in there. Like I said, that price point, hard to find stuff in that location for that.
Hey, Lance, I had somebody call me last week and ask me to run numbers for that house. Yeah, because it's funny because I looked up the taxes and everything and looked at the listing and looked at the photos. I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. And
awesome.
I ran the numbers for them. And so.
Yeah, absolutely. So people are already looking at it. It's crazy, but that is a coincidence that can happen just because there's not a lot on the market. Mm-hmm. Pick number two, investors out there looking. This is a West Kennewick fourplex, 1114 Cleveland. Each unit has about 1,000 square feet, lots of off-street parking, extra storage, and fenced backyards for the lower units, which you don't always get in those fourplexes. And that investment opportunity is coming in at $420,000. Pick number three, this is a stunning, stunning home. 2519 Blue Hill Court in Richland. This is a five-bedroom, four-bath home plus an office with a shop and a separate yard equipment garage. Because, McKay, I know what you do. You put the yard equipment in the shop. Next thing you know, you don't have a shop. So let's just have two shops. One
there
that you
go.
Can actually use as a shop, the other for yard equipment. Sitting on about 3/4 acre, 4,000 square feet, awesome for entertaining groups. Very, very meticulously designed property. You've got gorgeous hardwood and tile floors throughout, vaulted wood ceilings in the living room, custom fireplace nook. You've got a family room that has a built-in entertainment wall, wet bar, and floor-to-ceiling windows showcasing the view up there in South Richland. This place is just absolutely fantastic estate type property, and that's coming in at $624,900. So really hard to get in that area of town with that much square footage and that many amenities for that price point. So some good inventory that we do have available to show. If you've been out there looking and have had trouble finding that perfect house, please let us know. So back to looking at lending and what's going on. And Mike, this is a question we get a lot, and I generally refer this right back to you because this is what you do. But people will ask, they like, I'm getting homeowners insurance to protect my property, so I'm covered there. But now I come and I'm talking to you as a lender, and you're talking about PMI or private mortgage insurance. What is that and why do I need it?
Well, it's not that you need it. It's that Fannie Mae, it's the government. The government
requiring
needs, yeah.
It. Okay.
The government wants it. So it's kind of like the same idea of gap insurance for your car, mm-hmm. where they say, hey, you know, if you owe more than 100%, then they want to have this gap insurance. It's the same idea. Fannie Mae, if they have to take the house back and you're not putting down 20%, then you have to have PMI, mortgage insurance. So what it does, it essentially pays the loan down to 80% in the event that you defaulted. So it's insurance for them that you get to pay.
I get that. So what you're saying is, so if somebody puts 20% down, the bank's like, fine, no problem. If I have to take the house back and pay an attorney 3% and real estate taxes, closing, say it cost me 12, 13% to fix the house up and get it resold, I'm covered. So yeah. A lender that is getting 20% down says, don't worry about it. But the guy that's only getting 3% down says, hold on, we have a problem if we have to take this house back.
Yeah, basically the Fannie Mae is going to be underwater when it gets back to them. And so this mortgage insurance is insurance that will pay the loan balance down to 80%. So when they get it back and go to resell it, that they're not losing money.
Okay, so that makes sense. Now, that private mortgage insurance, do I have to pay that forever, like the whole time I have the loan?
On FHA loans, you do. It is requirement that it's just going to be on there because there's more risk. They look at those loans. On conventional, you just have to pay it until you reach 80% of the balance. Now, if you pay the balance down to 80% sooner, it's going to come off quickly. If after a couple of years you think, hey, the market here is going up by 10% and the house next to me, you know, is sold recently for more and I think I have it, after 2 years you can petition to have it removed and go through a process with the lender to do that.
Absolutely. And really, when you're looking at potentially, you know, depending upon the loan amount, but you're looking at $150 a month or something like that, you would want to do that. And yeah, in a market like ours that has appreciated quickly, you might be able to do it sooner rather than later.
So mortgage insurance is a percentage of your loan amount and then multiplied by a factor that has to do with your credit score and the percentage that you put down. So if you don't have a high credit score and you put 3% down, it's going to be a higher factor than if you have an excellent credit score and put 10% down.
Okay. Well, that makes more sense when we look at it that way and break it down that way. And one of the things we talked about before the break was being able to save for a 3% down payment. You might pay a little bit more in mortgage insurance, but if you're in a rapidly appreciating market, it's highly, highly likely that you'll end up making more than that with the appreciation, just based upon the historical values we looked at over the last 5 years.
Yep, that's right.
Good information there, Mike. Now, here's one that I get all the time from people, is my lender, they requested my bank statements. And so that they need to review my bank statements from the last 2 months. Now, what is a lender looking at on those bank statements? I mean, is it how many times I went to Subway last month? I mean, is that what they're checking out there?
No, they don't want to know about your $5 footlong special. What is it? Is it tuna or is it ham?
Hey, I'm a ham and turkey. Oh, I'm a ham and turkey guy. Absolutely. Okay.
Not the sweet onion.
No. I stay away from that for sure.
Basically, looking for things, we look at deposits and we look at large expenses. For example, if you have a lot of cash deposits, all right, what's going on? We try to get to the bottom of it. Basically, lenders are looking at things that Fannie Mae and FHA and VA might have a problem with if they audited the files. And so we're looking at it from a standpoint of maybe, you know, and a lot of times the client doesn't know to tell us something like, oh, they co-signed on a loan with their daughter when they bought a house, and for whatever reason, that didn't show up on the credit report. I can't say why. It just sometimes it doesn't. And it shows up and you have something that shows up on your bank statement as a partial payment to Bank of America, for example. And you're like, well, hey, this didn't, you know.
What's this?
What's this $1,500 payment? Oh, yeah, I help out my daughter with da-da-da-da. We bought a second home together. Or it's just something that wasn't readily on their mind when you were talking to them about their debts. Oh, well, we need to make sure, as a lender, we need to make sure that we have all of the debts. That's the number one thing, is that we have all the debts, so we're calculating the debt-to-income ratio properly. I would say that is more important than anything else. The second thing is, oh, well, I've got $50,000 to put down on this house. Okay, well, we need to show that you have it. Okay, so you give me a bank statement, and there's a $49,000 cash deposit. Well,
where did that come from?
Where did that come from? We need to source it, is what we call it. And we need to see where it came from, because we need to verify that you didn't borrow the money for the down payment. And now you have another debt that you have that we don't know about to calculate into your debt to income ratio. So
that makes a lot of sense. Anytime someone is putting that money down or putting that into it, you're going to want to know that that's truly equity,
truly their money.
Yeah, that they're putting in and not borrowed funds.
Oh, well, I got that out of an investment account. Okay, well, let's get that statement to show that money coming out and then going into here. So we have to follow the money.
That makes a lot of sense. So, Mike, I appreciate that, because those are two of the biggest questions that we get when we're sitting down with our clients, and it's nice to shed a little light on what's going on in those situations. I will tell you, the other thing that we get from lenders all the time that we hear about from our buyers is, please, when your lender requests a bank statement, if it is 5 pages, and even if the last page is blank, please send them 5 out of 5. Because so many times people will be like, oh, I got to go back to the lender because I sent them 4 pages and they're missing because it says 4 out of 5. What's on the last page? Well, even if that's a blank page, the lender still needs to verify there's not additional information, deposits, or debts listed on that page.
Yeah, most lenders just don't make up their own rules.
Yeah.
So we're following the government between Fannie and Freddie and FHA and VA. So again, when we turn in the loan to them to get reimbursed, you know, we need to make sure that we're meeting all of their guidelines.
Mike, great information about lending today. I really appreciate you coming in to shed some light on that and talk about that. As always, we are out there helping people buy and sell houses. If you've considered selling in this market, please let us know. You can go to kenmoreteam.com and shoot us a message. We would love to get you in there, talk about what you need to help maximize the return on your house. And if you are struggling to find the perfect house out there, we are using some very out-of-the-box strategies to help people do that. Also, go to kenmoreteam.com and shoot us a message. And we will be right back here next week.
Right here on News Talk 870.